Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the second day of October 2015. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzlo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Andy Schaefer of the Andersons Everly, Iowa facility in the northwestern part of that state should join us to take a look at the cash grain market and discuss the situation on the ground and harvest from his region. And then as we close out our half hour together, we'll take a look at the weather forecast with Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey Prairie Research Institute. He'll tell us all about the month of September, by the way. It was a bit warmer than the month of August. That one's hard to believe, but it was, and we'll do that during this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Here the way the numbers finished up on this Friday afternoon. December contract in the corn pit at the CME Group was up a half at 389 and a quarter. The March was down a quarter at 399 and a half. And May futures at 406 of next year down a quarter. July down a half. And September down three quarters. December of next year at $4.10, three quarters of a cent lower. That all in the corn pit. From the soy complex, November beans today down 3 cents at $8.74 and a quarter. January 2 and a half lower at 878 and a quarter. And the March soy beans 882 down 2 and 3 quarters, May down 2, July down 2, August down a penny and 3 quarters, November beans down 3 quarters at $8.82 and 3 quarters for the 2016 growing year. October bean meal down $4.10. It finished at $298.50, and the bean oil for the day at $27.84. was 75 cents higher on the afternoon. December soft red winter wheat and nickel lower at 513 and a quarter. July at 525 and a quarter, down 4.5 cents. And December futures in the hard red were down 7 today at $5.5. July down 7 as well at 534 and 3 quarters. Live cattle futures from Chicago now trading the October at $123 and a nickel, up $1.65 at this hour. February futures at $133.70 or 90 cents higher. October feeders up $2.42 and a half for the day at $179.82 and a half. The last trade in the November's at $175. We're $2.87 and a half higher in lean hogs in the lead option. October finished at $73.27 and a half, up 65 cents for the day. This, of course, is Illinois Public Media.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities and Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
Here's what some of the outside markets look like at this hour. Ethanol futures are down a half of a cent at $1.57 and a half a gallon. Crude oil per barrel is at $45.54. That's up 80 cents. And the price of gasoline on the RBOB, the wholesale price, at $1.34 and 2 tenths of a cent, is 2 and 4 tenths of a cent lower. Diesel fuel or heating oil in the lead option down a tenth of a cent at $1.52 and a tenth. And the natural gas for the day at $2.45 and 6 tenths is up 2 and 3 tenths of a cent. The Dow Jones Industrial Average up 26 points at 16,217. The U.S. dollar at 95.955 is down 0.381. And the gold futures for the afternoon in New York at $1,137 a troy ounce, or $23.30 higher. The weather forecast for the weekend looks like this. Starting this evening, mostly cloudy in the Urbana-Champaign area with a low of 47 degrees. A northeast wind at 14 to 17 will gust to 24 tonight. And then Saturday, mostly cloudy, a high of 61. Northeast winds at 16 to 18, gusting to 28. Saturday night, cloudy and a low of 49. We'll continue with those gusty winds, 11 to 17 out of the northeast and 25 on the top end. And on Sunday, mostly cloudy and 67 degrees. The northeast wind continues, gust to 17. Sunday night, mostly cloudy and a low of 53. We'll start the work week partly sunny. The winds will lay down and we'll go to 72 degrees. Should be a good start to the work week on Monday. More on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
On this Friday afternoon, Mike Zuzlo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas, joins us to look at the marketplace, what happened for the day in Chicago and for the week across the planet. Thanks, Mike, for being with us. I do appreciate you taking the time. This morning, we had a bit of a discussion about the soybean market, some of the numbers that are coming out of USDA, how they could and might change and what it looks like from one year to the next. I talked to you a little bit about last year's September world agricultural supply and demand estimates, which included not only a carryover that was much larger than what it actually ended up, so it was around 470, 475, and we're at 191 million bushels, but also a national average yield, or rather a national average cash grain price of $10 on the midpoint. At that point, it was ranging from 9 to 11 bucks. This would have been a year ago from about this time, and while the grain stocks or the ending stocks number was way off, the actual cash grain price was really dead on. It was $10.06 by the time we got to the end of the marketing year. I was hoping you might be able to put some of that in place for me and explain some of the things that happened to make one of them right and one of them wrong.
Yeah, and I think your morning question ended with, does that make the 9.15 average price likely to be correct, kind of almost regardless of what's going on with the carryover number? So kind of taking that, Todd, I looked at it framed it out. And I think the bottom line for what happened in 14.15 and why the USDA was correct on price but not on carryover was because their assumption was that the global ending stocks would be going up when they made those earlier assessments. And so, yes, their price was going to be more likely to be close if South America had a good crop. The assumption was met with reality. And on those same dates that you talked about the U.S. ending stocks and average price, USDA essentially took our 14-15 carryover for the world soybean ending stocks up to 90 million tons, about 23 million tons more than the prior marketing year, which equates to about 845 million bushels. So I think this is where the answer for me this year comes back into play. If the USDA is correct about South America having a substantially bigger crop or a close to the same number of bushels coming up in this winter's crop, then their average price of 9.15 a bushel is probably going to be relatively close. If you do not have good weather in South America because of some of these changes that we've seen in the 14-15 supply-demand numbers recently this week, and probably the lower acres that we'll get in the 15-16 numbers next week on supply-demand, I think that 9-15 number will be on the lower end of the spectrum. I think one other big point to make, recall that we had 7 million hogs lost in 2014 as a result of the PED virus, and that when we got to July of 2014, lead month hog futures were running $133 a hundredweight. So I'm guessing that not only did we see substantial liquidation because of the price and not wanting to put more weight on hogs, but we also just did not have the meal demand because of the lost numbers, because this disease affected the young hogs very, very quickly. So you essentially lost meal demand in a very rapid amount of time. So I think that also worked in favor of USDA. Now, I will have to say, though, when I recall last fall and doing marketing meetings, in May of 14, our futures price was $15.40 a bushel on the board in lead month. By the time we got to October, Todd, it was $9. Yet in the early part of harvest, cash market in central Illinois was still running $14 to $15. So why am I bringing that up? Because I think USDA, regardless of whether they're right or wrong, they brought in and introduced additional inefficiencies in the market. In other words, the futures and the cash separated from themselves. And in part, this was due to not keeping up with the supply and getting those numbers of lower soybean supplies out fast enough, in my opinion anyway.
And explain what that means exactly.
Well, I think that the private market, much like the PED virus, and these kind of go together. I remember being at the data users meeting last fall with some of the other analysts that you work with, and the topic of conversation was, why are we out here in the private sector seeing this disease literally kill, you know, whole herds of hogs, and you're not willing to acknowledge that in your hogs and pigs numbers, and therefore you're not in your feeding numbers. And the same point can be made about why was the cash price of beans running $14, $15 in the early part of the year. It's because everybody in the private market, for the most part, knew those beans weren't out there that USDA was talking about. So I think this is where they were very much behind the curve for a time. And I would say that the South American crop essentially brought their average price back around to where they thought it would be.
All right. So the South American crop was just good enough to keep the price down.
And the PED virus is bad enough to not bring up any more additional feed demand. Yeah, exactly.
Right. And so to put that all into, try to summarize it, so just so that everybody's kind of clear where we had, so it wasn't last fall and winter were not bad for PEDV simply because those who produce hogs finally learned how to actually control it. But prior to that, so that would have been going back, it was really devastating in the previous winter and on into the spring and even into the summer months to some extent. And we were short of soybeans, of course, had really high prices at that point. And then we had a good crop come on. USDA dropped out the $10 price range, but you're saying consumption made up for the fact, part of it to begin with, and then we put pressure on, I guess, from the size of the South American crop. And I guess it all comes down to available supply, whether it's in the United States or outside the United States for soybeans, and then consumption worldwide, because this crop is now not a crop where we dominate on the global landscape.
That's exactly right. And you have a currency market right now, and this is what we talked about this morning. You have a currency market right now that is extremely favorable for Brazilian exports. It's extremely favorable for growing more beans in Brazil this coming year. I mean, it's hard to believe, but since September of last year and the current price, if you look at the price of beans out of Paranagua in Brazilian real terms in 60-kilogram bags, and that's how they essentially price them, you're talking about a rally of about 50%. Since September of last year to their current price. So not only have they exceeded expectations because of the currency and the export price is so much better and favorable to them, but the producer down in Brazil is not getting hit nearly as hard as one would think because of how they market beans and how they purchase inputs.
Okay, so you believe that the U.S. dollar, because it will not gain strength in your opinion, and we talked about this wedge formation, if it breaks to the downside, will make U.S. commodities more exportable, in particular soybeans. What does that mean for the price of soybeans? Are you feeling friendly to the marketplace for soybeans? We're at $8.74 and a quarter today in the November contract.
Yeah, this is where, you know, to come back to the weekly talk and what happened in the market this week, Todd, this is where the meal really came into play. We saw the October meal go down to close to its major low set about a month ago, and it's testing some major multi-year lows at this point in time after today's close. And I think this is where the trade is trying to price in as large a crop as possible heading into the October supply demand report. Does that mean that I want to buy beans? No, I think what I'm trying to say is that 850, 855 level in the front end beans should be very strong support thanks to the wheat, thanks to the dollar, and ultimately thanks to the Bloomberg Grain Index having a buy signal because theoretically the dollar would have a sell signal. While I'm not a buyer of beans, I'm not nearly as negative at these price levels as I would be if it were a dollar higher. And by the same token, if we did go up to 950, 965, we would start to become uncompetitive again unless that dollar continued to go lower, lower, lower. And that would not only increase our ability to export, but it also would put some pain in the Brazilian farmers' pocketbook as well and maybe scale back some of their increases.
Can I safely say you're sell short-term rallies in the soybean then?
Yeah, it does not pay, I don't think, to have any kind of re-ownership in place, especially the commercial re-ownership or a DP contract or something like that. I think that the basis is getting better and better, and you need to take advantage of that. I'd rather have paper re-ownership in place and be ready for a South American weather scare, you know, a month or two down the road here.
Thank you. Fantastic talking with you this afternoon.
Well, you pulled it out. I mean, you did it, all the work. Thanks, Todd. Have a good weekend.
Yeah, bye-bye now. That, of course, is Mike Zuzulo. I did very little, frankly, Mike and the rest of the crew here that are analysts do a great job. If you don't listen every day, please do tune in. And you can always listen on willag.org. That's willag.org. In today's agricultural news, Glencore is in talks with the Saudi Arabian Sovereign Wealth Fund and China's state-backed grain trader COFCO, along with Canadian pension funds, to sell a stake in its agricultural assets. Selling assets is one prong of a wider strategy by the Swiss-based trader and miner to cut about a third of its $30 billion debts and regain investor trust after its shares tumbled by about three quarters this year to record lows in tandem with weak global commodity prices. Glencore declined to comment, while COFCO was not immediately available to comment. Last month, Glencore said it was hoping to raise $2 billion from selling assets, including a minority stake in its agricultural assets, by earlier next year. The sources did not say the likely size of the stake being sold or the likely amount it would raise. Let's go to Washington, D.C. now, where Agriculture Committee Chairman Michael Conway of Texas, along with 16 other committee members, has sent a letter to U.S. Trade Representative Michael Froman addressing concerns of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, or TPP. While members expressed hope that ongoing negotiations will yield an agreement they can support, they outlined several remaining concerns. Those concerns include improved market access for rice and dairy and expressed disappointment in a new carve-out proposal for tobacco that establishes a dangerous new precedent, according to the lawmakers. The letter states, "We are hopeful that you will succeed in your endeavors to conclude an agreement that is good for American agriculture and the jobs, both on and off the farm, that it generates." Well, a report by USDA's Animal Plant and Health Inspection Service, or APHIS, points to contaminated bulk animal feed bags as the possible culprit to spreading porcine epidemic diarrhea virus, or PEDV. AgWeb reports APHIS detailed in a report how these bulk bags could have resulted in a disease epidemic that ended up costing the U.S. between $900 million and $1.8 billion. The APHIS report says that after entry into the U.S., PEDV was discovered in six locations within 2 weeks. The sites were geographically separated. However, they did receive animal feed from bulk feed bags that can be reused and, according to APHIS, are not often disinfected. The bags could have picked up the virus in the origin country in a variety of ways. Elsewhere in Washington, D.C., the Senate Committee on Banking, Housing, and Urban Affairs rejected an amendment to eliminate corn ethanol from the renewable fuel standard. By a vote of 7-15, the committee dismissed the proposal by Pennsylvania Republican Senator Pat Toomey. National Corn Growers President Chip Boling of Maryland, after the vote, said in a statement, "Senator Toomey's amendment would have taken America backward." Further, Boling called the vote against the amendment by the 15 senators a strong message to the rest of the Senate that the RFS works. Well, in what's being considered a victory for U.S. farmers and ranchers in their ongoing fight to protect private and sensitive personal and financial records, a U.S. District Court judge has dismissed a lawsuit brought by animal rights and environmental activists against the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. The lawsuit was over the agency's withdrawal of proposed Clean Water Act rules that would have required livestock and poultry operations to report information about their operations. In their lawsuit, the activist group claimed EPA's withdrawal of the reporting rule was arbitrary because it lacked clear reasoning. ConAgra today has confirmed the company will relocate its headquarters from Omaha, Nebraska to Chicago and eliminate some 1,500 positions, that according to Meeting Place. However, plant-based positions will not be eliminated in the move and the restructuring of its office-based workforce. The restructuring is expected to save some $300 million over the next 3 years. And finally today, U.S. Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack yesterday signed a memorandum of understanding that will bring more ag science education to museums. The MOU was completed with the Association of Science Technology Centers and will provide more than 500 member museums and science technology centers with resources to incorporate agricultural science and research in their programs. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Let's turn our attention now to the cash grain market. Andy Schaefer at the Andersons Everly, Iowa facility is on the phone line. Andy, thanks for being with us. Tell me about the lay of the land there on this Friday afternoon in your part of the world.
It's a full swing bean harvest right now. We're probably 60 to 65% harvested on soybeans. We're having multiple people tell us that this is their best yields that they've ever had. Here in multiple reports of 70, 71, 73 bushel per acre fields going, which is just fantastic for the farmer. So super happy about that. And corn harvest is probably 2 to 5% started. I mean, it has not started at all. So guys are heavily in the bean harvest right now.
What would a normal bean yield in your area be?
Probably 50, 55. So they're quite a bit. And I would say the average is around 60 to 65. The 70s are on the high end, but we're hearing reports. But normal is around 55.
Do you know, are they happily just selling across the scale?
They are selling the beans a little bit, and that's very common, it seems like, in our area, where guys will sell their beans before they do the before they sell the corn. And I think if you ask me right now, guys are going to sell beans and store corn.
And is the basis holding up very well in the face of this many beans in the area?
Yeah, you know, the bean processors with crush margins like they're seeing, they're hanging in there. Most bean processors are 30 to 35 under. Our country elevator bids, pretty much everybody in the whole area is 60 under, and our corn bid hasn't changed. It's 40 under, and the lines at the processor are very long.
Right. So, yeah, I could believe that. I really, truly could. What would at harvest time a normal basis for you be for soybeans?
We're right about normal, 60 under. I think that is normal.
Yeah, so what does that tell you when you're at 60 under with facing a really, really big crop?
Well, I think if you're an elevator, you'd like to see that get a little cheaper, but, you know, the processor drives that market, and with them hanging in there with such good crush margins, they're just standing in there at 30 to 35 under and owning every bean they can because they're making good money at it, so they got space to fill, so they're buying every bean they can.
And you said you were just getting on the tip of the iceberg for the corn crop. What has come off has been as expected in yield?
Yeah, the early stuff is that has been coming off. Guys, you know, not a whole lot of reports yet, but my gut tells me, given the beans are doing as good as they are, I bet we're going to hear very similar results in the corn as well, with people happy with what they're with their yields.
And your actual bids for the day?
We are 40 under on corn, 349 cash. Soybeans, we are 60 under, 814 cash.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it. That's Andy Schaefer. He's with the Andersons out of Everly, Iowa.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois. Dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers, by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers.
It's National Ice Cream Sandwich Day. The ice cream treat was likely invented in the summer of 1900 on the Lower East Side of New York City. On this day in agricultural history in 1861, the first U.S. national income tax was passed to aid the Union war effort. In 1866, the first patent for a tin can with a key opener was issued in the U.S. In 1887, numerous websites give credit to Rowell Hodge for the patent of barbed wire. But history shows that Joseph Glidden is the father of modern barbed wire. The DeKalb, Illinois native attended a country fair where he witnessed a demonstration of a wooden rail with sharp nails protruding along its sides. It inspired Glidden to fashion barbs on an improvised coffee bean grinder, placing them on a smooth wire and then twisting another wire around the first to hold it in place. And in 1966, Richard Shoup died. An American pathologist, he was the first to identify an influenza virus and first to vaccinate animals against influenza. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Friday afternoon. Three items to consider. First, if you can, stay with us on our home radio station and many of these other radio stations as well. Commodity Week is coming up next. Our panelists include Dan Zwicker, along with Jason Clapp and Bill Merritt. It's a really good program. If you haven't listened to it already, you can do it right now. The whole of the program is already up on the website at willag.org. So if you want to take a nap, I think that's a good idea. You can turn it back on a bit later and just listen to it in the Bluetooth right there on your combine this afternoon or maybe later this evening when you're all refreshed after that nap. That's the first item. The second item is that next week we'll start a fun drive here on the home radio station. I'm going to be asking for your participation, so get geared up for that. I won't do it too hard, but I really do need you to help us out financially and make sure that this programming continues to come to you and that, well, frankly, everybody involved is sharing a piece of the program. It's part of what we do as public radio here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. And finally, the third item is the Farm Assets Conference. That's coming up November the 24th. If you didn't go last year, it's a little different than our all-day Ag Outlook Conference. We bring in some university professionals, some outside folks. We spend the day. It will be Tuesday this year. That's when the Commodity Conference normally takes place in Normal, Illinois, and we'll be there instead of that conference, but as a different option rather than that conference. So we will be there. The Farm Assets Conference, your normal commodity conference annual meetings, will take place prior to the Farm Assets Conference. It's Tuesday, November the 24th in Normal, Illinois. In about a week, week and a half, I'll tell you more about it and how to get your tickets, but just save the date and plan to be with us for the Farm Assets Conference in Normal on Tuesday, the 24th day of November.
This is Jim Angel, state climatologist at the Prairie Research Institute at the University of Illinois. Based on preliminary data, September 2015 was the ninth warmest September on record for Illinois. The statewide average temperature was 70.2 degrees. That's 4 degrees above average. The warmest September on record was 1933, was 72.2 degrees. The statewide average precipitation was 3.42 inches, and that's 0.19 inches above average. However, the precipitation was unevenly distributed across the state. Much of the state received between 3 to 5 inches, while western and far southern Illinois were much drier with less than 3 inches of precipitation. Some of the most sizable monthly totals came out of Vermilion County near Hoopston, where one station reported 11.78 inches and another reported 11.74 inches. According to the National Weather Service forecast, temperatures will slowly rise during the week. Highs on Saturday and Sunday will be in the 60s. By Monday, highs will be in the upper 60s and low 70s, and from Tuesday through Thursday, they will be in the 70s across the state. Overnight lows will be coldest on Sunday, dropping down to the low 40s in northern Illinois and in the 40s and low 50s elsewhere. For the rest of the week, they will be in the upper 40s in the north and the mid-50s to the south. There is no significant chance of rain until Thursday. Looking at next week and the week after, Warmer and wetter than average conditions are expected to prevail. This is Jim Angel, state climatologist at the Prairie Research Institute at the University of Illinois.